You're listening to another great show from the Nod Network. Find more great content at nerdod.com.
This is Heroes Needed, the Overwatch Players Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is Heroes Needed, the Overwatch Players Podcast. I'm Dave.
And I'm Richard.
Back once again with a number of things for you this time. We've got, we're going to cover the Halloween event that has recently rolled out across all platforms. We're going to talk about some of the recent character changes from the most recent patch and update. Keep saying the word recent. Keep saying it over and over again. We're going to touch on our speculation about what's coming at BlizzCon, what that could mean for the game, what it could mean for the wider kind of mythos of Overwatch, if you will. So let's jump straight into the Halloween event. Halloween Terror, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And what that's brought to the game so far.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Halloween Terror is one of the ones that we've seen. Well, we've seen it before. We've seen it for the last couple of years or so. And it has a particularly interesting mode called Junkenstein's Revenge, where Junkenstein is set up as the mad scientist, hence the mad scientist kind of skin that he has, which looks particularly interesting.
It looks like Doc Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely does. It's a really, really, really fantastic skin. And it's set up that he's made a monster, a Frankenstein's monster, which is Roadhog, with his incredible skin as well. And they throw a few others in there. You've got Mercy as the witch. It's the kind of the healer of the group. Symmetra comes in there as well.
Is that where the Mercy witch skin first originated?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's from Halloween. Absolutely, yeah. And you've got the Symmetra demon one and the Reaper kind of count. Vampire Dracula kind of skin as well. Reaper actually has two really, really good Halloween ones. He's also got the jack-o'-lantern, like, pumpkin head.
He lends himself well to Halloween skins, right?
Yeah. Definitely. And his guns are fantastic in the pumpkin jack-o'-lantern one, because they're his normal guns, but essentially they have the little candles burning on them, the wicks instead of the fuses.
Really?
It's really, 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 really cool. It's great skin. Still can't play Reaper for anything, but, you know. Great skin. And essentially, it's another one of these PvE, these kind of player versus environment. I don't want to call it a story-driven mode, but more of a story than anything else that we have. In other words, not player versus player, not traditional Overwatch in this way. So essentially, you're on... It was Eichenwald last time, and this time as well, I think. And I think there's a new version on Chateau Gouillard.
How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, I think so. Eichenwald is the one that I was playing anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that we saw the year before or so. And essentially, you've got streams of these Omnics that are kind of... they're renamed Zomnics, as in zombie.
Very
Omnics.
Nice.
Nice little bit of wordplay
well
there.
Well played, Jeff.
Tip of the hat to Jeff, as always. And they're coming in all these different bits. You've got some character selection. I think they've increased the character selection since last time. I swear that there's more heroes that you can pick.
It seemed like most of them when I played it recently.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. Weirdly, one of the modes that I do enjoy playing Hanzo as... Yeah, well, it's actually quite good. But I played a bit more McCree, actually, in the other one, because somebody picked Hanzo in that one. Somebody played Torb, the new Torb, which was fun, as the zombie Omnics tried to deal with all the lava, which was amazing. But actually, it becomes this really, really fun one where you are playing co-op. It is a bit different. Everyone still has all their abilities and so on. But you're in just something that's a bit of fun and a bit more relaxing, and it's a great chance to come back to the game. I think we've mentioned this previously maybe, but whenever they have these events, that's the reason that I come back and pick the game up again. If I've maybe not played in the last few weeks or the last week or so, that's why I go and pick the game up again. I see that there's the event come out. Mm-hmm. I want to play it, even if it's a mode like this that I've played before. I want to pick it up and I want to play for a little bit. It's a fantastic way of getting people back into the game.
Yeah, and I think I played it before when it came around briefly as part of the anniversary event, where they sort of some of the game modes came up for a limited time in the arcade.
Yeah.
So I had played it, because this time last year I didn't have Overwatch.
Yeah.
So I played it when that was around, and it's really fun. And I think I'm pretty sure it was definitely less heroes before, because I recently played it as Genji, and although we won, I'm still not a very good Genji player.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was compelled to choose Genji out of all the heroes, but never mind. but it was interesting because it's a very different type of game mode compared to Overwatch proper.
Yeah.
And it's nice that it's in there. I mean, I played it for the loot box because you play for the loot boxes,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And it was the first time I had seen the new Torb.
Yeah.
I was playing that. I'd forgotten the update had taken place, and I started playing. And I was like, why is the floor on fire? Oh, yeah. And it's nice that that's back in there, because there's a bit of familiarity, but then also the ability to make little changes.
Yeah.
Because if they do change the map, or they do change the characters that are available, it makes it familiar but different.
Yeah.
I think that's what you need in a game, which, obviously, Overwatch, with the updates and changes that have been made as time goes on,
yeah,
it's still the same game. You know, it's still very much, and we'll come on to what we might think of this later on, but it still very much is the team-based game that it set out to be when it first came out.
You played it on day one, you play it now, it's very, very recognizable. It's the same game. There's more heroes, there's more maps, there's tweaks here and there that I agree with all of them so far. They all make the game more enjoyable, more friendly, more welcoming. But it is the same game, first and foremost. And I don't think that's a problem at all, but I do think, we look at on a much more broader, on a global level, why do we have these events and holidays and traditions like Halloween and Christmas and everything else, just as a society? We have them as these natural breaking points in the year, these moments to relax, these moments for gatherings. You have these big family meals around Christmas or Thanksgiving in the States, whatever it might be. They serve an important purpose. And in this community of Overwatch, where people are playing a lot of this game, people are playing competitively, people are waiting for League to come back, this is a great one that there are no stakes to this. This means nothing. Your skill rating's not going to go down if you have a bad game in Junkenstein's Revenge. It's pretty hard to have a bad game in Junkenstein's Revenge, but if you did, even if it was terrible or you were practicing something new, it's just a moment to relax. It's a moment to catch your breath and enjoy it, and really, really, really enjoy in terms of just how the game is.
Yeah. And I think that we'll come on again to the actual character changes soon, because you're right, it's a game that has had so many little updates and so many little revisions that it is the same game, but it is different. It's nice when they come back, because it's just, I asked that question about the witch skin, because it's someone I've seen a lot of Mercy players having that, and it was only this time around playing that game mode that I go, oh yeah, I've seen that skin in other places. And the same with the Symmetra skin. So it's nice to make little connections like that and go, oh, okay, cool.
Definitely.
And as well as that, it's the little things that come out of it. We talk about skins all the time because, of course, loot boxes, but
everybody wants the skins.
There are some amazing ones that have come out, and this timer is no exception.
Yeah.
I think that obviously the new Sombra skin, the Bride skin, that's really, really cool. The new Widowmaker Spider skin, which I was quite lucky to get a loot box just this morning.
Only slightly jealous of that one.
And it's great because it's that thing, we've covered it before, but getting a skin for a hero that you don't play as often is still cool, because now I want to play that hero to show off that I have that cool skin.
Exactly.
Actually, I had quite a good game as Widowmaker earlier on today. I don't know why. Every once in a while, I had...
The stars align.
It was on... the Ilios map, where you've got the control point on in the sort of house on the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
I forget what the name of that particular phase of Ilios is. But it was on that map, and I had a great game as Widowmaker. I was thinking, how is this happening? this isn't me. I then went on to have a terrible game on the next round, but still.
Of course. But for that brief moment, you were popping heads.
I was. It was great. There was a Zenyatta player who did not like me very much. But this is the thing, like these little changes and these little updates, the things you get in the loot box is like, I've got a voice line of Genji saying Happy Halloween in Japanese. Like, I don't need that. I'm going to use it for a week. What's the point? But it's a cool thing to have.
Yeah, very, very cool thing. Very, very, very cool thing. I mean, the skin this year that really, really stood out to me was Wrecking Ball's pumpkin jack-o'-lantern style skin. It's just so beautifully detailed in every little aspect. The fact that he's that kind of almost scarecrow monster type thing with the terrifying grin on top of it.
Yeah.
And then when you go into the heroes gallery and you look, you can, click across and see what the weapon looks like and all the detailing on the gun turrets that he has on either side with like the leaves coming out. And it just looks fantastic. It really, really is incredible.
And such a new hero as well.
Absolutely.
And to have a brand new Halloween skin like that is fantastic.
Yeah, to get such a nice looking skin so early on. And, I mean, in terms of that, I mentioned before, I think that these events are a chance for players to come back to the game if they've not played recently. It's also something that people look forward to. Mm-hmm. There are skins that I've seen that are event-based skins, like an anniversary skin or a summer games skin. One of the ones for me for the summer games was the D.Va South Korea skin, essentially. I always thought that looked really, really cool.
Yeah.
I got that in the summer games when that came around.
Okay, I'm jealous of that.
People do look forward to these. I'm not saying it's the focus of their year or anything. They're not sat there crossing the days off a calendar until they can get a skin, but it makes it more exciting because you've been looking for a skin for so long that actually now you've got the chance to get again for that brief window, and the excitement builds up. Or maybe this is what you've been waiting to spend the coins on, the credits on, the points, to actually buy the skin that you wanted, for example, as well. So I know whenever these things roll around, I always get particularly excited because I'm going, oh, great, I can get that skin and maybe there'll be a new one.
Yeah. Well, it's like we talked about Wave Racer Diva for a while, a few episodes back, and I didn't buy that.
Yeah.
And I could have and didn't, and I'm annoyed at myself. But the Grillmaster 76.
Yeah,
I was so close to buying it, didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I think because I got a different skin that I quite liked at the time, and I thought, why spend credits?
Sure.
Because for some reason I hoard these credits for no reason whatsoever. Got 5,500 credits. You know, I could spend them on.
You know, you've got to report those credits on your tax return. That counts as an asset.
I do hope not.
Have you seen the anniversary skin for D.Va?
No.
It's amazing. It fits in with the vibe of like Route 66. It's very much almost like an American, like, late or early,
I'm trying to remember, like, kind of
Americana, rockabilly, that's the word I was say Americana, like that kind of a thing. That skin looks so cool.
That is a very cool one.
It looks so cool, and that's going to come around an anniversary, and that's the kind of thing like that. That's what I want. But it's these skins that stand out that people really look forward to in addition to the regular ones.
And I love the fact that you can buy skins whenever you want with credits.
Yep.
But the anniversary ones, you can only... Sorry, not anniversary, but the seasonal ones,
you can
only buy during that event.
Exactly.
And I think that's a really, really clever way to keep people playing because for that reason where... If I want those summer game skins, I'm going to have to wait until next summer.
Yeah.
I can get them, but I've got to wait till then. Same with the anniversary. Like, I really want the Combat Medic Ziegler Mercy skin, which is an anniversary skin. So I'm going to have to wait for anniversary if I want to get that skin again.
Yeah.
So that'll keep me playing. Besides the fact that I enjoy the game, we'll play anyway.
Mm.
That will, you know, the Halloween event that came up, I've not experienced one of those yet.
Yeah.
So when it came up, I thought, well, I need to play some more so I can try and win some of these,
definitely,
skins and
get some more loot boxes,
voice lines and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're great. And even the detail in the loot boxes.
Yes.
The idea that all the different loot boxes have a different design to fit that event.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that it's a little pumpkin basket of candy.
Yeah.
That when you open it up, it all explodes out
and
everywhere.
It cackles and laughs and the candy.
And it's again, it's the example of a little touch that's completely unnecessary, but it's such a cool thing to let you know that that's what it's
absolutely
from.
Absolutely. It's the class and skill that you expect from Blizzard. And it's the touches that make their games feel really like a Blizzard game. I know, like, before Overwatch, I'd only played a handful of Blizzard games. I played World of Warcraft briefly when I was a bit younger. Played Diablo, particularly like Diablo. Very little StarCraft before getting my ass kicked. But Overwatch is the first one that I've really played a lot of. But over time, you start to see these. And these really aren't just random shots in the pan, little details that you're catching that no one else has ever seen. This is what a Blizzard game feels like. Somebody's really considered these elements. And it's that kind of appreciation of their fans. They know that people are going to appreciate that and notice it. Whether they notice it consciously or, you know, subconsciously in that way, they will notice these little details and it will really, really resonate with them. They absolutely love these little things and the games are littered with them.
Yeah. And I have one gripe.
Yeah.
And that's that I spotted a new Hollywood map, which was a spooky nighttime Halloween themed version of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I got put onto that map for about 20 seconds before the server rebalanced and I got kicked off it, and I have not seen it since. And I've played regular Hollywood a couple times since then, but I've never found that. Almost imagining, did I dream it? Was it real?
It's like Brigadoon. It only exists for a brief window and then disappears.
But is it? I'm trying to work out now. Did I imagine this? Because I've not even been accidentally put on that server and you can't search for it. It's not like with when Busan was launched and it had its own arcade mode.
Yeah.
You can't find this thing. I think it was real.
See, now you've put the idea of imagining it in my head. Now I'm doubting myself. But I'm pretty sure you're right. I'm pretty sure it's a thing that exists.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, if we're crazy, we're both crazy. And
well,
I don't think
to this,
there's
if
a gas
leak.
If
you have played that map, please just comment or something and let me know that I'm not just making it up. But, it's driving me crazy. So I want to play. It was so cool. And I was wandering out and all the posters were Halloween themed.
See, this is where Jeff gaslights you, deletes the map and any reference to it.
That might happen.
Just disappears into the night.
If you've played a Halloween Hollywood map and you know what I'm talking about, please comment so I know I'm not going crazy, because I think I might be.
Halloween horror map truther over here.
So moving from there on to the changes that we've seen, because there's been quite a few recently. Some small, some quite big. I mean, I know we spoke at length about the Torbjorn rework, because it is such a significant rework that when I accidentally played him a little bit last week.
Accidentally played him.
Well, I think I was playing Mystery Heroes, you know how it is. And I forgot the change had happened. So I ran out there and tried to throw an armor pack, and suddenly I was overcharged. I was like, what's happening? Why am I orange? What's going on?
It's like someone's changed the controls. It's now like the Southpaw version of the controller.
That's
just
what it
oh
felt
god.
Like. I was like, I'll throw an armor pack. What's happened? Oh, I'll put a turret here. Oh, I threw it over there. What's what? Hang on. Oh, I'm dead. So looking at it, there's quite a few little updates, but there is... Sorry, Halloween Terror is the name of the event, not Halloween Horror. My mistake. This is something that you mentioned earlier on that I hadn't spotted straight away, but it's a really, really, really quite cool update in terms of accessibility for all players. And that's the changes for colorblind players.
Yeah.
Reading the idea that they've made changes to the HUD and the interface to change the color options so that rather than just red and blue, you have a number of different shades of colors and all the rest of it to allow for those who otherwise might not be able to see it quite correctly and give everyone a better playing experience.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing that they didn't have to do.
No.
But they have done, which makes it great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the kind of developer support that we see on such a regular basis from Blizzard. And it's really, really nice to see from a development standpoint the extension of the welcoming nature that Blizzard's always wanted Overwatch to have. This kind of optimism that we see in the narrative and in the lore of Overwatch, the ways that they continue to update the game to get rid of kind of toxic players and toxic speech, the way that they've kept the league and the way that they've run that. Every little element is built around anybody can pick up this game and start playing it. Everybody is welcome here. Anybody can do this. This is something that everybody should be able to have fun and see something of themselves in.
The world could always use more heroes.
The world could always use more heroes. And literally, you know, when we see think of seeing themselves in this, this involves literally being able to see the game. This is a big part of it, of course, and being able to choose the colors that work best for you. You know, it's one thing, and it's a very, very good thing for a developer to put a colorblind mode in a game. It's another thing to let somebody really adjust that to what's going to work best for them. And then again, it's that level of care we talked about before, but this is a really, really kind move by Blizzard to make this inclusive for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. So if we go through some of the changes here, because some are more significant than others, but we'll go through and just get some thoughts on it. Number one is Brigitte. They've reduced her shield from 600 HP to 500. That's a bit harsh, isn't it? That's a bit like... I'm sad about it, but without having a definite reason as to why. I just kind of felt like 600 HP, cutting it down a bit...
This is the thing. I'm struggling to have an opinion other than, I like Brigitte. Why are you changing Brigitte? Leave Brigitte alone.
That's the only emotion
that I have here. I don't think it will be as much of a problem as it maybe sounds, because she's pretty tough anyway. It depends how quickly that shield regenerates. I've not looked at the regeneration rate on that, but my understanding is, particularly if she's hitting stuff with that mace, it regenerates pretty quick. But yeah, any time you touch a character like that that I particularly like, I'm gonna be unhappy.
Yeah, I think maybe it's worth mentioning the developer comments, because this is their kind of reasoning for it.
that is good to listen to.
So what they said here is, the health of Brigitte's barrier was extremely difficult for most heroes to deal with, especially as she closes the distance to her targets. That is true. I've voiced my frustrations playing against Brigitte in the past, so fair enough. This change still provides Brigitte with substantial survivability, but should be more rewarding for opponents who pressure her.
That's fair.
Okay, I get that. Because I've complained about how hard it is to break that shield down myself. So,
well, this is the thing. Taking out 100 from it isn't so much that it breaks what the hero does, but it does bridge that gap more.
Yeah.
If you to be able to do an additional 100 damage, that's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world.
No.
Particularly for those squishier targets, by which point she's, you know, stunned you and then beat the living daylights out of you.
That's true, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I can see that.
So next up is Doomfist.
Mm-hmm.
With the update to his hand cannon, damage fall off now starts at 15 meters, so the damage falls off a lot sooner than it has before.
Okay, good.
One less reason to play Doomfist. Or one more reason not to play him. I'm not sure which is the right phraseology there.
I mean, let's not play
Doomfist
together.
You are not my favorite. Developer says Doomfist is all about getting up close and personal with his enemies, but his hand cannon spread was tight enough to do surprising amounts of damage at longer ranges. especially against bigger targets.
Sniper Doomfist.
That's right, yeah. This change brings his weapon in line with other shotgun-style weapons by making its damage fall off beyond 15 meters.
That makes sense.
Again, it's one of those changes that does make sense.
Yeah.
But again, not inspiring me to play Doomfist anyway.
And yeah, and this is the thing, is they say, like, 15 meters. I'm pretty sure we're in a game world here, not the real world. But 15 meters is a feral distance.
True, yeah.
That's a pretty good range. That definitely fits more with the character rather than, yeah, jokingly we said it, but rather than having him be like a weird mini sniper, yeah. It makes a lot more sense.
Then we got McCree's got some love here. This cooldown on his combat roll reduced from 8 seconds to 6 seconds.
Yep.
Which is nice. I mean, it's a great ability, but it did feel a bit slow to come back online.
I mean, second to D.Va, McCree was probably one of the first characters that I kind of fell in love with when I was starting playing the game. And this one really, again, similar to D.Va, actually, was kind of really enjoyed the character design and like the look of it and the lore. Yeah, I love playing it, but McCree is just such a cool character. You know, he's that classic cowboy. He's got that amazing gun, but at the same time, it's like a robo arm. It's a very, very, very cool character. But I think the reasoning...
And his belt buckle.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. He kind of spells it out, doesn't he? But I think the reasoning behind this one's really, really interesting. Being able to choose more or not have to choose as much between using it for mobility and for kind of reloading purposes or evasion purposes and reloading purposes and so on.
It says here, previously McCree's combat roll cooldown felt too restrictive, which sometimes prohibited players from using it. The new faster cooldown allows for more flexibility when choosing between using it for mobility or an instant reload. Does it automatically reload your
weapon? Yeah,
how
this
have
is
I
one
never
of the coolest things. Yeah, no, completely. So you can fire off, you can run in and fan the hammer, roll and then fan again. Or just, pop some shots off as you run in.
How have I never known that?
It's
I've been
so
playing
good.
This game for almost a year. I never knew that happened.
It definitely took me a while before I figured that out when I was playing him.
I am shocked with myself for never realizing that.
It's a very cool McCree move, and it's so, so, so useful. But yeah, that is something you can do.
I wonder I'm always getting my head clicked by McCree.
It is not obvious that he can do that unless you have read the actual abilities. You wouldn't expect that in any way.
No.
But it is a really cool ability.
I've learned something today. So next up is Farrah. Now, Farrah's got quite a big update. And again, looking through it, I think it makes a lot of sense. But
yeah.
So her concussive blast, the cooldown's been reduced from 12 seconds to 9 seconds.
Okay, yep.
And her rocket launcher, the attack speed's increased. So it's lowered the recovery time between shots from 0.9 to 0.75 seconds.
Okay.
Damage has been redistributed between explosion and impact. So explosion damage reduced from 80 to 65, but impact damage increased from 40 to 55. Which makes sense, because those direct hits never seem to do quite as much damage as you thought they would have. Explosion knockback reduced by 20%.
Good.
Self-knockback amount increased by 25%. So that's interesting, because it's kind of... They've made the shots a bit less powerful in some ways, but faster. And also they've made those direct hits more devastating,
well,
I guess.
This is the thing. For me with fire, I think... it sounds stupid now, but like a rocket should do the most damage if it hits you bang on.
Yeah.
It always kind of feel that she could just put them anywhere near you and you'd get a solid hit out of it. Whereas, yes, obviously if an explosion went off next to you, you would definitely feel it.
The science part is
absolutely.
Explosions are bad.
Explosions bad, stay away from them. Big red X through explosions. But if we're in this game, it should be rewarding the accuracy and the skill of hitting somebody bang on. It shouldn't be a case of you could just drop one near them and they go flying.
Yeah.
And in terms of that knockback, again, if we're reducing the knockback a bit, yeah, to be fair, you'd fire one of those and the person ended up on the other side of the map. Like, it really was quite a far distance that you got flung. So I can definitely see a reduction in that won't, I don't think, take away the kind of the satisfaction of something being well timed, but it will fit more with her kind of skill cap, and it will fit more with, this isn't necessarily an easy hero to play. You've got to juggle being in the air and your flight time on the boost packs and be able to hit missiles that aren't a straight linear weapon. You do have to kind of guide them slightly. And then you've got knockback. This is a hard hero to play.
Yeah. And I've noticed recently, and again, I've only really played Farrah Mystery Heroes because I normally wouldn't choose her in a game. But I've noticed that speed difference with the rockets, it's noticeable.
Yeah.
Only, 0.15 seconds, but it does feel noticeable.
Yeah. In a quick game like Overwatch, any little change like that changes how it feels, for sure.
So the comments on here, we wanted to increase how responsive Farrah's rocket launcher felt, because a full second of recovery between shots made it feel sluggish. That's true, isn't it?
Very, very true.
To balance out the improved recovery time, we shifted some damage from the rocket's explosion to the direct impact damage. The overall damage potential is now increased when landing direct hits and decreased slightly when only dealing explosive damage. We reduced the amount of knockback each explosion causes, as it made it very difficult to aim at Pharaoh with rockets coming in at a faster pace. The concussive blast cooldown reduction should allow the ability to sync up more closely with the jump jet cooldown when used for mobility. Because you see a lot of the, I mean, I've seen a lot of the pro players using that concussive blast to kind of give them a boost on takeoff.
Sure.
Which I've never managed to do myself, but they managed to do it. So I guess, yeah, if that comes in sync with the jump jet, you can kind of alternate them a little bit, can't
you? Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. I wouldn't even have considered that. Yeah.
Oh, poor May's only got the update, which is updated visual effects for all abilities.
Yeah.
Come on, May. I was talking, I don't know if I mentioned this on the last episode, but I had recently watched May's cinematic, and I hadn't before. And having watched it, I now have so much more love for May, and especially for Snowball. So
I love May as a character. I love the lore. Still hate playing against her. Still hate playing her.
Yeah.
Just a frustrating character.
Very hard to play against, I agree.
Yep.
Or if you're in a Mystery Heroes game where you're against two or three of them, that's not fun.
And not even in a way where I feel like the person's particularly outskilling me in any way. Just being annoying.
I particularly like when an opposing May player freezes you and then just very casually shoots you once in the head. It's the most frustrating. But also, okay, yeah, I can't argue with that. Like,
also, think about how savage that is.
Yeah, like, oh, no, what's that? You're frozen, you can't move.
That in no way fits with May's character.
She's a much nicer person than that.
That sure would have been very dark if she froze someone near to death and then put a bullet through their head.
Not a bullet, a massive icicle.
A massive icicle. That is so dark.
That is dark. All right. So next up, Orisa, her main weapon, the maximum spread's been reduced by 20%. I already think that weapon's pretty deadly without making it more concentrated.
Yeah, fair. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, Orisa, really, she is a gun turret and a shield.
Yep,
I mean, that's mean. She's also a lovely character and I'm sure a lovely person. But, robot. Robots are people, guys. Robots are people.
There's one thing Overwatch has taught us, robots are people
are definitely
too.
People, and if you don't say that they are, they will rise up and kill everything.
Yep.
And they will come out of the sea. Korea learned that the hard way. But yeah, she's a gun turret and a shield, so I think it makes sense definitely to increase the potency of both the gun turret and at some point the shield.
What they said is, Orisa spends a significant amount of time firing her fusion driver from a relatively stationary location. Yeah, such a gun platform. The weapon's spread value caused it to feel too random when leading targets at a distance, considering the projectile's travel time. We've tightened the spread slightly, which should leave her close and mid-range damage potential largely unchanged, while making it feel better when hitting targets at longer ranges.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
Agreed.
Soldier 76 gets a little buff. Number of shots until reaching maximum spread increased from 6 to 9.
Cool.
So making the running gun character more deadly.
They're tightening up a lot of spreads. That's what we're noticing.
Yeah.
Everyone's been on like a shooting range. They've all practiced the training. They got that spread down tight.
I think they've realized that the game, a lot more of the game has a ranged element than perhaps they originally thought.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's definitely, well, it's almost never a close quarters game.
No.
It definitely does have a lot more range than I think a lot of games.
Because most of your characters, even characters like Genji with his dash, you know, those shurikens, they do a lot of damage at range.
Yeah,
if you want them to. And that's the kind of thing, like most of the characters, with the exception of maybe Roadhog or you know, Reinhardt, a lot of your characters, range is their thing.
But that said, for a lot of those characters that don't have range as their thing, they have ways to close the range.
True.
The presence of range is assumed. They know that there will be a range between the characters. Mm-hmm. By the way, the presence of range is assumed is the title of my band's first album.
Well, that's the title of this episode.
Definitely. The presence of range is assumed. That came out of nowhere. but they have a way to close that range. Roadhog has his hook. Genji has his dash. D.Va has their boost.
True.
It's almost like anybody that doesn't have ranges built into them, presence of range assumed, they have a way to close it instead. And again, that's part of balancing, but I feel like, I've never considered it that way before, but I think they know that there will be range there.
And they said, Soldier 76, damage output was a bit low, but not too far off from where we felt it should be. Making it take a few more shots to reach max spread smooths out the weapon's spread curve and should make his damage more consistent. Nice. I don't think I've ever noticed him not doing enough damage, personally.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a problem he has. But it's kind of, we get to the point where it's almost less, how does it feel to play against, and how does it feel to play? And it's kind of like if they were tuning a car or something, and I am not a mechanic, but if something was wrong on that, if a wheel was loose or there was some other issue, you would immediately know it's a flat tire or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like what they're doing is just tuning it. This is going to feel, for these players that play these heroes and love these heroes, almost like the car's just been in for a service. It's had its oil changed, there's fresh tires on it, the suspension's all done, it's all ready to go. It's going to feel nice. And that's really what they want the game to do.
Not a mechanic, but you love throwing out those car terms. Ah,
gotta have some great car talk. Gotta throw that in. Make people think this. Yeah. Yeah, throw in some car terms to car talk. But no, it's going to make it nice for these people. They want it to feel enjoyable when you play it. They don't want to make it feel sluggish, like they said with Farrah. Make it feel a bit delayed or kind of weighted down. It should feel nice to play and light and nimble and enjoyable.
Yeah. And then last but not least, I mean, we covered him at length last week, last episode, sorry, but I'll just mention some of his actual definite changes. So yeah. With Torbjorn, my favorite one is reduce the size of Torbjorn's head hit volume by 10%. Hmm. So it made his head smaller.
Popping those heads.
Rivet gun, projectile speed increased from 60 to 70 per second. Reload time reduced from 2.2 to 2 seconds. Turret targets enemy hit by primary fire. So if you're that's clever. So if you're shooting an enemy, the turret will look at them rather than whoever else it's shooting for.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes way more sense.
Definitely clever. Alternate fire recovery lowered from 0.8 to 0.6 seconds. Damage per shot lowered from 150 to 125. Reload time reduced from 2.2 to 2 seconds. And spread randomization readjusted.
Nice.
Again, yeah, make it faster, make it less damage. I get
this
that.
This is what I like about Blizzard and about Overwatch in particular, but the way that Blizzard approaches games. They did this massive rework. They tested it internally. They put it on the PTR. They tested it some more. They pushed it live. They watched how everyone played it. And they went, yeah, we didn't quite get it. Mm-hmm. So let's tweak it. And the thing is, this will go through the exact same cycle. They'll test internally. They'll put it on the PTR. They're bringing this live now. And this is what they continue to do. It's this iteration that makes it a wonderful game to play because they really consider that. Changed from 150 to 125. These are numbers that only, you know, statisticians care about in any other game or any other thing. But this is the kind of thing that Blizzard thinks about endlessly when they're preparing for something. They really want to make sure that this plays right and feels right, not just for this hero, but for the other 27 heroes. They want to make sure that everything feels spot on in any element of the game, and it's something that I really do appreciate, the way that they move things and change things and update things at a pretty rapid pace.
Mm-hmm. And one thing they've also changed is his forge hammer. The radius has been increased to align with quick melee. So if you want to hammer people to death as Torbjorn, it's easier now.
Smack him in the face with a hammer.
And I won't go over the turret overload molten core. We covered that at length last episode, so I won't go through all that now. But suffice it to say that Torbjorn is somehow more deadly than before, I guess.
He's a fiery boy.
Yeah, to throw those turrets out, having very, very brief experience with using him in play, it feels different. Definitely feels different. And that whole throwing a turret, letting it build itself while you use something else it's a clever update. It's like it makes a lot of sense for someone who is a superstar engineer like Torbjorn would have a turret that would build itself. He wouldn't have to hit it with a hammer. It would just do it.
Exactly. This is the thing. You've got these Omnics building themselves. You've got this automation in the world, and he's still there artisanally making every turret by hand. Doesn't quite fit. I know he's got a Santa skin, but building everyone in a workshop.
In Switzerland, building them artisan turrets.
It doesn't really make sense. No. You know, when he is this master engineer and everything else is so seamless. So yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. But a game shouldn't feel like work, unless it's like Job Simulator. But it shouldn't feel like work in the sense that you shouldn't be doing mundane stuff. You shouldn't be banging a turret with a hammer to make it build. You should be playing the game. You should be enjoying it. And obviously there's certain elements that you have to do, like reloading and all this kind of stuff. There's things that need to operationally be done. But it shouldn't be a thing of, I need to sit here and bang something with a hammer until it builds. You should be able to be more in there with your team.
Yep, I agree. So those are the updates. There's some other very small sort of audio tweaks and other things, but not character-specific updates.
Sure.
But all things to improve the game. So, big fan.
Absolutely.
So moving on to that, we've got BlizzCon coming up.
Yeah, BlizzCon.
And it's interesting because I've never been that into BlizzCon before because in my head, BlizzCon was World of Warcraft.
Yep.
Primarily, obviously, StarCraft and Overwatch.
Yeah.
But I never played many of them, I guess. Sure. I have played... Before Overwatch, I had played StarCraft, but only really when it was new.
Yeah.
Not a lot since then. And I'd always play Terrans, and it was boring. I'd always just get lots of little soldiers and put them in bunkers.
And then the Zerg came.
A very boring play style. As many soldiers as possible in bunkers.
So you went with the Cold War strategy.
Basically, yes.
Big military, not doing much, in bunkers.
Yes. That's exactly how I played the game. Hence why I wasn't very good at it. But now with BlizzCon coming up, it does make you wonder what's going to come for Overwatch. Because if Blizzard were going to announce anything big or update anything significantly, this would be the time to do it at their own convention.
This would definitely be the time to do it. I mean, all eyes are on them. They own the stage. They own the entire, you know, surrounding area, it feels like. They really are established there. And everyone, huge numbers of people are coming to see them. That's the entire purpose here. This isn't a Comic-Con. They're not sharing space with anybody. This is for Blizzard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very, very excited for this conference anyway. Again, I'm not somebody that normally gets excited for BlizzCon. But we have the Overwatch World Cup happening there, the final stages of that.
That's right, yeah.
That's happening, so that's a massive event. You know, as somebody that's looking forward to League starting again, but is saddened by the fact it doesn't start till February, still many months away,
that's
with
a long time away.
Big old holiday right in the middle to get through.
Yep.
We then, you know, to get to the start of League. So to see the World Cup being there is awesome. I am also a big fan of Diablo. Diablo 3, which I have played, I think, on two different consoles now, is now launching on the Switch, and I will absolutely be a sucker and buy it a third time because it is now the Eternal Edition, as they're calling it.
Nice.
But I will absolutely play that again, because the idea of having a game as good as Diablo 3 on the Switch is literally something I've been asking for since the Switch was announced, and never in a million years thought that we would see. No offense to Blizzard, but I did not think that they would port it over to that. I mean, come on, fingers crossed, Overwatch for the Switch now.
Hey, matter of time,
that would be amazing. But no, I never thought we'd get Diablo, and now we're getting Diablo with everything I want. There's still a really small indie game, well, not indie game, but more independent game by a company called Runic Games called Torchlight. Just a complete tangent for a moment. If anybody looks up Torchlight or Torchlight 2 on Steam, you'll be rewarded with a fantastic Diablo-like game that I really wish they would put back on, that they would put on the Switch. They have a new one coming out, which is really, really cool. But back to Blizzard. So there's a lot of news here that's already exciting. And then we look at Overwatch. And the interesting thing is that there's not been all that much let out. If I think back to BlizzCon last time, we were hearing rumors of a new hero. We're hearing rumors of Moira, maybe. We didn't know it was Moira back then, but that's what we're hearing rumors of. There was stuff to do with the League that we knew was kind of hinted at and so on. And we look at this, the only real rumor that I've kind of heard of is some form of a single player. And that's a really, really interesting concept.
I like the idea of a single player, maybe a story mode, yeah. Maybe a... because this is the tricky thing, right? So you have single player games, well, rather, let's go with first person shooter games that have a single player mode. Oftentimes, you're leveling that character up. He's learning new things as you go through the game, whatever else, unlocking different things.
Yeah.
Now, Overwatch, you've got it all.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all the character's abilities. You've got all of the... There aren't really ways, and as we've covered before, rightfully so, you don't level your character up in
sure.
multiplayer game.
Yeah.
However, what if you did in a single player environment?
Hmm.
What if there was a single player story-based campaign that tied together some of the cinematics that we've seen and some of the different maps that we've seen,
yep.
and given us a bit more outside of what we already know, but then you play one of these heroes throughout that story, and perhaps you do see levels, and perhaps you do see improvements or customizations, things that they won't bring into the multiplayer because it would throw the balance off, but something that you could then see in a single player version. So you could start off playing Tracer in the very first story game,
mm-hmm.
and then by the end of the story, perhaps you've upgraded, you know, her blink ability, or you've upgraded the pulse pistols, or you've done something like that, which you couldn't do in the multiplayer environment.
So something that I've been, you know, talking to you a lot, and this is going to be part of a larger thought that I've been thinking of, yes, the like end of this evening, but also just more generally for the past few weeks or so. One of the things that Blizzard definitely likes is expansions. It's what they like. You look at, you know, World of Warcraft, that's had several expansions. You look at StarCraft, that had expansions. Diablo had expansions. Hearthstone has expansions. Everything that they make has expansions. Additional content that they work very, very hard on without needing to release a new game that they expect the fans to pay for, and they do, and they are rewarded with something outstanding. And it is an expansion of an existing core product or franchise, not a re-release or a new game. Everything else has that except for Overwatch. We take a look at one of the things that I really, really wanted to see, and I still sadly don't think we'll see it for a while, which is I would absolutely love a 2-hour feature film or a 10-episode miniseries of some kind done by Blizzard's in-house animators. I think the shorts that we've seen are utterly fantastic. Mm-hmm. They're some of the best animation that I've ever seen, period. I think they're incredible at telling a story. I think they look fantastic, and I think, as I've said before, I want more lore in Overwatch. I want more history. I think that's one of the best ways to do it, because you need to see and hear the characters and really get a sense for it. So how about this? What if, in some form, I'll suggest a couple, we had a single-player campaign, or not even a campaign, a single-player mode that was released as expansions. Either layers of history revealed, each being their own expansion, these few years, expansions 1, 2, and 3, and a mission or two for every single character in each time period. So you have that first mission that we saw, well, not the first mission, but an early mission for D.Va, right when she's going from being kind of a programmer to first joining Mecha. And each one of these missions is accompanied by a very small short, a cutscene as we would normally get in a game. Mm-hmm. And it looks incredible. This is complete wish casting right now. But we see something from going from being something like a programmer into actually being in Mecha. Then you play around as Mecha. You learn about the other people in the team. The next mission, whether that's in the next expansion or that's, you know, you get 2 or 3 missions for each hero, whatever it might be, is then another mission when they're all formed up as a force. And the final one is the one that we see in the short, where the Omnic's coming out of the sea and she's fighting off these hordes and everything else. That would be pretty incredible. And if they could do that for either every hero, or maybe the first expansion is for 4 heroes, and the next expansion's for 4 heroes, and we get a few missions, a couple of cinematics, and there's your expansion. That would be absolutely incredible if we got that for Overwatch. It would advance the lore, it would give us more animation, it would give us a richer connection to the characters, and it would make people more invested.
Well, here's my prediction then.
Hmm.
They're going to release an expansion.
Yep.
It's going to be called Overwatch The Omnic Crisis.
There you go.
And it's going to be set during that period, and we're going to get elements like that, different missions for different heroes at different places during the Omnic Crisis.
That would just be fantastic. That would be perfect.
You've heard it here first. What date is BlizzCon?
Let's us find out.
Because if that comes true...
Also, Jeff, if you are ever struggling for ideas, you have 2 people that you could hire and would be very, very willing to work for you.
It's actually November 2nd and 3rd this year. November 2nd and 3rd. So
we've got
a few weeks between you hearing this episode. Well, a couple weeks between you hearing this episode and BlizzCon. If it comes out and it's called Overwatch The Omnic Crisis, the first of many expansions to follow, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to claim it. In this alternate universe, this happened. It became the Omnic Crisis.
Yeah.
Let's go with it.
Well, I think I'm excited about the idea that, I mean, you're right. You know, I've played Hearthstone, and I've played many of its expansions.
Mm.
I've not played World of Warcraft, but that's had loads of expansions over the years.
I want to say like 5 or 6 now, and I feel bad for not knowing the actual number.
A significant update.
Well, it was huge. When I was playing World of Warcraft, and I should stress immediately, I did not necessarily spend a huge amount of time on it. I mean, when I say not a huge amount of time, anybody who plays World of Warcraft spends a lot of time on it, but I was not getting up to the level cap. I was not doing all the end game stuff, but I invested a good long while in it. And when I remember, I think it was Mists of Pandaria, that added a whole new like continent, a whole new area, whole new races, whole new stuff, huge new like story campaigns. And they've only kept that going as it's gone further on. They keep adding these massive regions and massive amounts of story. And yes, that's a very, very different game than Overwatch, because it's not a competitive game. It's not a single player necessarily, but there are moments when you're going through the missions, the fetch quests, that kind of stuff, where it feels single player because you literally are playing by yourself to get to the points where you can do the raids and everything else. So they add huge amounts of content with expansions every single time, and it's only a couple of years between expansions, a few years.
Yeah. So here's hoping for Overwatch's first one, because Overwatch is, it's almost... Is it 2 years old now? Yeah, it was 2016 it came out, wasn't it? So it's 2.5 years old.
It'll only be just about going into 3.
Yeah, so it's almost 3 years old. It's the right kind of time. You've got the fan base. You've got the people who are ready for something new.
Yeah.
People who, like us, when a new short comes out, it's like, well, in fairness, I hadn't really watched a lot of the shorts before D.Va Shooting Star. But then when I watched that, I then went back and watched all of them.
You have to see all of them.
And they're incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Reinhardt's one specifically, because being a big Reinhardt fan.
I love it. Absolutely.
Honor and Glory was beautiful.
And this is the thing. They have almost a Pixar quality to them, which I can't think of any higher praise to give to an animator than a Pixar quality.
Yeah.
But it has that thing of there's a, not grit, not realness, but that real sense of emotion in it. Of that's a moment when this guy is going from a young, cocky, arrogant fighter who believes in honor and glory, believes in heroes and everything else, to seeing that actions have consequences, to really having to deal with it and buckle down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, everything turns out okay for him, but at the cost of his mentor, the cost of somebody that he values so deeply. And that is a pretty difficult subject to tackle at the best of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, in films, but also in works of literature throughout the ages, that's a difficult topic for people to grab their head around. Yeah. But they do it in a few minutes in an animated short about a fictional game where a giant German knight is fighting some robots. These are really, really impressive storytellers.
You look at I'm going to admit something here on a podcast that I wouldn't normally admit.
Oh, I'm excited.
But I watched Maze and cinematic, and I cried a bit.
You tear up watching that, don't you?
I cried a bit at the point, and spoilers if you've not watched it. If you haven't watched it, go and watch it. It's incredible. At the part where she runs out of power, creating things she needs to create, and Snowball gives his power so that she can do the thing to save herself.
Yeah,
and works out well in the end for Snowball, I'm happy to report.
But at that moment, you didn't know.
Yeah, you don't know that.
And again, that Pixar quality, they absolutely the could emotion. Have killed Snowball.
But then again, it was that. And then earlier in that cinematic, you know, when she loses her team, and you're like, this is heavy.
Yeah.
This is heavy for a video
pretty
game.
Pretty quick within that cinematic, 6 to 8 people have died
very
quickly.
Yeah, people that you know this character is close to.
The problem was she was frozen for too long, right? So you've got to imagine a lot of the other people that she knew in life have aged pretty considerably more than she would have
perhaps
expected.
Perhaps even lost some in the Omnicrisis.
Exactly.
But there's that. And then you look at the Widowmaker and Tracer short.
Yep.
The idea that, if in that scene where that bullet would go right through Tracer,
yeah.
but because she recalls, she saves herself, but then that Omnic monk is killed.
Yes.
And so she's failed her mission, but she saved her own life.
Yeah.
So there's some heavy topics for video game cutscenes.
Yeah.
Which if you boil them right down, that's what they're
the most trivial, that's what they are.
Video game cutscenes.
Absolutely.
They are completely unnecessary to enjoy the game.
Yeah.
They do add a richness and they add value to it, but they're not necessary.
In any other game, a surprising number of people, a high percentage would probably skip through them. They'd be mashing the X button.
Exactly.
Like a lot of people do. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Winston. Well, I like Winston, and I like that opening cinematic, but I now press the X, obviously, to get through it, because I've watched it several times.
Oh, yeah, I've watched it, so now I skip.
But a lot of people in video games will just skip through any kind of cutscene, and it's always boggled my mind, because you need to see it to understand the story, and you want to play, and so on, it's fun. But a lot of people just skip straight through those.
Yep.
These are worth showing. These are worth seeing through and watching and enjoying. And again, I if you chained these cinematics together, you'd have probably half an hour of content, maybe something like that, 20 minutes. And that alone would be amazing. If they could just give us, a 40 to 45 minute episode, 10 of those, or a single 2-hour film or something.
Netflix original series.
It would be amazing.
Come on, Netflix. You're throwing money at projects.
Yeah.
Let's make an Overwatch series.
I don't think Blizzard's struggling for money right now.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. But how incredible would that be? They could even tie it in with League, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. League has that pass that you can buy that gets you some skins, gets you, access and that kind of stuff. Tie it in with that. Make people buy the pass. That way they get the season of TV, the film, to watch throughout the winter. And then they roll straight into League and they already have the League pass.
I would buy that.
I would definitely buy that.
Cool. So speculation aside.
rampant speculation.
Yeah, which none of it may be true. Maybe all of it be true. Who knows?
I hope it is, though. It's true to me. It's true. Until Jeff stands on stage and says that none of this is true. It's true to me.
On that, though, we'll bring this episode to a close.
Yes.
If you have any other ideas, if you found anything particularly exciting in the Halloween Terror loot boxes, if you have any significant speculation that you want to share, any wishes or dreams that you want to share on BlizzCon and what may come out of it, do hit us up on Twitter at HeroesNeededPod or on any of the NerdOD social pages or at me personally if you want to have a go at my ideas and say how wrong I am, come at Olsen Prime. And we'll hope all that comes true, but we'll see soon enough.
Yeah.
And then we'll discuss it next time. But until then, I've been Dave.
And I'm Richard.
And we'll see you later.
Bye. We'll be right back.
The world could always use more heroes.